Blog Talk Radio.
All right, another episode of Talk Radio live right now on Blog Talk Radio and BackSportsPage.com. I am Randy Delio along with Jose Padilla. And a special start time, 11 a.m. to start breaking down the NFL season. This might be a permanent change. We have not decided yet as we break down the world of professional football today as the season starts this time next Sunday. The Giants start taking off this Wednesday against the Cowboys at MetLife Stadium in beautiful, beautiful swamp-filled East Rutherford, New Jersey. You can get in contact with the show today at 760-283-0846. That's 760-283-0846. You can find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/sportspage. And we're on Twitter. This crazy rumor that Jose actually has a Twitter account is true. You can follow Jose at AngryJose15. And you can follow me at RZeliaBSB. And you can even hashtag Real Sports Talk. So we know that you're talking about us. And Jose, I was even considering even getting us a Real Sports Talk Twitter account. So we can just update that. But I have a hard enough time updating my Twitter account on a normal basis as it is. So I don't know if it's the smartest idea on my part to add it. You had another Twitter account onto my phone.
So I would not, because yeah, I think I've sent like 10 tweets the whole time I've been doing it, so I probably would not.
Well, that's also because you don't know how to use Twitter. So that's like, I think that has a good portion of that problem right there. So this
I've actually gotten responses back, actually, because I've made some disparaging remarks about the Yankee broadcast recently.
I know
how I'm doing.
I was about to say, you don't know what you're doing, but your response is you're stalking Carmelo Anthony. So part of that,
touche.
Part of that is just a restraining order warning. So I know it's part of, you know, that's the other part of it is. But, you know, it is what it is. Like, Twitter is a fun tool. Sometimes it can be time-consuming, especially when you don't have access to your cell phone majority of the day. So you're like, all right, I really would like to tweet that. And by the time you get on Twitter, you're like, all right, that was about 5 hours ago. I can't really get on there to do this. So anyway,
you know, Patrick beats me to all the stuff I want to say, like, right away. As soon as I see something, I'm like, oh, and then 2 seconds, I go on, and Patrick Crane's already beating me to the punch. So you know what? I just got to let it go now.
You know, before we get diving into the NFL, I'm just looking at some of the headlines in the sports world today. And one of the ones that just caught my eye is Dwight Howard sent an ad in the newspaper in Orlando. I don't know if you saw this story.
No, please divulge on this.
Yeah, okay. Dwight Howard, of course, left, for those who lived under the rock in the NBA world over the last month and a half, 2 months, 3 months, Dwight Howard was not the happiest person in Orlando. He got traded to the Los Angeles Lakers. Orlando got what I like to call spare parts for him with a couple of draft picks, protected draft picks. It was just one of those things where it had to be done. I thought the Nets deal was a little bit better for Orlando, but they didn't want to give Dwight Howard exactly what he wanted. With that being said, Dwight Howard took an ad out in the Orlando Sentinel, and he said this: "Words cannot express the love that I have for Orlando. With your support, we have done great things in this city, from hanging banners to impacting our youth." Jose, do you have an issue with athletes taking ads out in the papers of the teams they just left saying thank you? Is it too cliche? Is it too impersonal at that point? Was the damage already done where we knew this was more of a PR move?
No, this is definitely a PR move. I mean, listen, unfortunately, this sort of thing has become cliche because everyone seems to do it now. The only problem is a lot of times the people who do it mess it up. Look, we all know that Dwight just had it up to here with the Magic organization. I'm sure he loved the area. I'm sure he loved the fans, but he just could not take the front office. I mean, when push comes to shove, and as you said, you know, quite expertly, the only reason why Orlando didn't do the net trade was because they didn't want to give Dwight everything he wanted. So while we might differ on whether or not the trade that they did make with the Lakers was of with spare parts with the other teams involved, we do both agree that the only reason why he's not a Net right now is because they just didn't want to give him everything he wanted. So this sort of thing has become cliche to a point. I don't know if I necessarily think that this is just hyperbole from Dwight Howard. He probably does mean this, but again, at the end of the day, when you look at it, chalk it up to just plain cliche at this point.
Okay, well, and just to finish out what the ad said, he says, to play the game of basketball in the NBA is a blessing, and to have the opportunity to play before the Orlando fans for 8 years was truly a privilege and an honor. Those same fans he's praising right now are going to boo the crap out of him when he comes back to Orlando this year.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, despite whether or not the issue was with the front office or not, the fans are going to let him know just how they feel.
Now, I think if I had to name the top five players who left on their teams on a negative note, and the reaction they got on their first return back, I think we both agree that LeBron James' return to Cleveland was the most hated.
Oh yes, yeah, without saying that's number one.
Yeah, that
and
was.
Jen agrees as well.
Jen agrees on that? Okay, excellent.
Yeah, Jen totally agrees with that.
I would have to say the number two would have to be Vince Carter's first game back in Toronto after he got traded to the Nets.
Yeah, I agree with that one. I totally agree with that as well. You can actually even make a case that was even more of a vindictive sort of thing because that was a whole country. Let alone with Cleveland, it was just Cleveland. I mean, the whole country was completely against with Carter at that point.
I'm going to have to just stop you there and shenanigans on that. I'm calling shenanigans. I'm calling
shenanigans.
I'm calling shenanigans on a whole country after one man, okay? First off, I don't think the people in Montreal even know what basketball is. Let's just call that out right now. Okay, Montreal.
All right, well, all of Ontario, against
these cards. Okay, I think it was more of just the city of Toronto. They all were wearing bibs and we hate Vince Carter t-shirts, which Vince, by the way, laughed the whole thing off, which was pretty funny. But, and Vince is still a very big person in Toronto. He still has his restaurant out there, still has all these different things out there. But, I call shenanigans, because I do believe that he was hated by a fan base. He still is. He still gets booed every time he's out there.
Yeah, he does. It's amazing how he still gets booed down there.
You know, it's one of those things where it's LeBron going back to Cleveland was just spite. And from what I understand this past year, I didn't get to see the game. I didn't get to see the game this year between Cleveland and Miami when they were in Cleveland, but I think the hatred had died down. Because if you remember the second meeting of the first season LeBron was in Miami, the second meeting between the Cavs and the Heat, the Cavs actually beat them at home.
I remember watching the game. There is still a lot of vindictiveness on, from the Cleveland fans, but, what I've always said about that is, I know what the owner Gilbert was trying to do. He was trying to get something back, something for LeBron when he made the trade because that we all forget it's not technically that LeBron left. He was gonna go regardless, but he actually technically got traded, and they got a draft pick and whatnot. But
There is some vindictiveness
from the fans, so and it'll never leave. That's never gonna leave, because this was the guy that was supposed to save basketball in Cleveland. Was supposed to be the guy that was gonna bring a title to Cleveland for the first time in any sport in God knows how long. And it's like leaving a jilted lover. Once the scoring hits, there's just no turning back on that.
I'm very impressed. That was a very interesting analogy you just used right there. That was very good.
I'm bringing my A game, even though it's only 11 o'clock, bro. Just like last week.
I appreciate that. That was very. There's almost a tear in my eye right now. It's like a proud father seeing his son grow. And the funny thing is, you're older than me, so that's the best part about the whole thing.
You're having a Futurama moment right now.
I feel a tear coming on. Anyway, moving on. So, just to put a bow and ribbon on this topic, obviously Dwight Howard's going to have a lot of animosity going back to Orlando. It's just going to be on the rate, you know, how far will fans go? Are they going to start chanting? You know, like the Magic are going to be a cellar dweller team. They're going to be in line for the number one draft pick for the 2013 NBA draft. I don't think there's even a doubt in my mind about that. They're not going to be a playoff team. They're not going to compete. That there might be in games, but I don't like their talent level is just beyond pitiful. I was trying to figure out a nice way to say that. I think beyond pitiful.
Bad, but I do think that there's definitely a chance that they can compete for the number one pick.
Who's their number one guy? Who's their number one guy? Tell me who their number one guy is.
I'm gonna look right now. I'm taking a quick look at their roster because obviously I don't know it off the top of my head. Taking a quick look at this roster, there isn't anyone that really stands out, obviously. I mean, Al Harrington is on this team. Is he still technically on the team, or have they waived him?
Al Harrington's still there. You have.
I mean, I guess he's going to be an option. J.J. Redick is there, but I mean, he's more of a piece, not really a big part. Turkoglu is still there. Turkoglu, is he actually still on the Magic, actually, Randy?
Yeah, he is.
He wasn't a part of that deal?
Nope.
Oh, my God. All right, maybe there will be some problems. I will say this, though. I think they do have a lot of pieces for the future. I really do. I love this kid, Mo Harkless, they got in that trade. He's from St. John's. I'm telling you, this kid's going to be special. I'm not saying, like, special Michael Jordan special, but in a few years, everyone's going to know this kid's name. I'm telling you right now. He's going to be one of those guys that is just going to do a lot of different things. He's like, I would equate him to AI, not necessarily in the skill, but, like, in what he's going to bring to the table. Like, he's going to be that kind of player. You know, I expect a lot from him. You know, they still got Jameer Nelson, who I think is a really good point guard. Quentin Richardson is still playing. You know, I think he's decent. The more I look at this roster, yeah, I definitely say that you're probably more on the you're definitely more right now that I'm really, really, like, studying this team. But I think they're going to be in a lot more games than you think. They also got a follow on this team, which he's a really good player. I don't think anyone will deny that.
I was just the full trade. Andrew Bynum sent to the Philadelphia 76ers. Andre Iguodala got shipped to the Denver Nuggets. The deal left Orlando with follow Al Harrington from Denver. Mo Harkless and Nikola, I feel bad. I'm going to butcher this guy's name.
Nikola Vucevic.
Vucevic, him too. Okay, good. From
Philly. I know him because I used to see him play a lot of basketball at USC, so I actually do know. He's actually a good player. This was a guy that was picked for the Knicks during the draft last year, so I'm very aware of this guy's game. He's got potential. I'm not saying he's going to be an all-star anytime soon, but he's the kind of guy, 14 points, 10 rebounds a game. He's got decent range.
And also, Josh McRoberts and Christian Eugene go to Philadelphia. The Lakers get guard Chris Duhon and forward Earl Clark from Orlando. The Magic also traded Jason to Philadelphia. So, and there was a bunch of draft picks involved going to Orlando as well. Orlando will have a $17.8 million trade exception to use over the next year. So maybe, just maybe, Ron Hennigan from Orlando, the general manager, might be able to pull another move of getting a big name for a team like Cleveland or Milwaukee or another.
I'm sure the Knicks wouldn't mind parting with Amari Stoudemire if that option ever came.
Yeah, for a $17.8 million trade exception, yeah, I would personally think that Magic can use story. And actually, you know, I told you earlier in the summer, the Amari Stoudemire situation, they're calling anybody. They said, listen, Coke and fries for Amari Stoudemire. We're game. Ruth Chris Steakhouse gift voucher for Amari Stoudemire. Let's do this. Let's make this deal. And
I'm going to go that far, but I do think that they are trying to only because I think they know that they got damaged goods at this point. I still think Amari, if he can just keep himself in relatively good health, I think he still can be a really good player in the NBA. It's just a question of whether he's going to be healthy or not. That's the only issue with Amari at this point.
Okay, well, again, I'm just trying to make a point what the Knicks would be willing to take at this point, because you're right there. I think right now there's remorse as far as Amari Stoudemire is concerned. He was the first chip, and I think we said this to you, and a lot of people have said this out loud, that I think we all knew Amari Stoudemire wasn't New York Knicks uniform. You know, I think we all sort of felt that. when he came in, Raymond Felton was running the point guard, and that D'Antoni up and down system, it was the same system Stoudemire was playing. So Stoudemire playing under Mike Woodson, exactly the fact that he and Carmelo can't be on the same page. It's the simple fact of Amari has been in the system for so long that now he's trying to change the system. And at this point in time, it's trying to teach an old dog new tricks. It just doesn't work. And I think that's the one perspective that nobody's really looking at as far as Amari Stoudemire is concerned. I really do think that a change of scenery might be good, but no matter where he goes, he's going to have to start learning how to play a half-court offense, something that he's never done. He's used to playing a motion fast-break offense, and now he's being told he has to play defense after 10 years in the league. It's just not working for him.
Well, I'll say this. I want to see how they how the Knicks play this year when they have a full offseason before I go that route, because I think that might be a little bit of an extreme. Now, I don't doubt the Knicks have been trying to shop Amari. I'm not questioning. I'm sure they have been. But I do want to see what happens after having a full offseason, a full workout, you know, when they go to South Carolina or wherever the hell they go now. But I want to see that first before I'm ready to say, you know what, this isn't going to work. Because these guys are still phenomenal athletes. And to me, to say that they just can't learn something because this is what they've been doing the whole time, it's kind of that might be a little short-sighted, and I don't want to go that route just yet because I think they're a little bit better than that.
I know we got off base for the first 15 minutes of the show. We ended up talking basketball. I apologize, but I saw this headline. And I thought it was a good topic for us because just about, you know, what was going on with that whole situation and how you and I have sort of fought like cats and dogs on it. This sort of thing happens a lot with these players putting ads in the paper, and I really just wanted to get your view on it. I thought it would be an interesting topic for us. So I know we have to go back. We're going to go back to the NFL right now, but I just wanted to go over that with you and see how.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was a good thing to do. I had to just get it out there. So
no, listen, we're here to inform. We're here to civilize. That's what we're here to do.
I feel the same way. So let's start the show now. Let's. Where do you want to go first with this?
Oh, well, first off, I'm watching SportsCenter. Cam Newton was at the Auburn Clemson game yesterday.
He has a mighty throw. That's all I'm going to say about
that. That's what I'm saying. He might have the best throw in football. I'm gonna put that out there. I'm gonna have to look at people's profile page on the NFL media pages here and see who's Cam Newton. Yes.
I have to tell you though, Jen is strongly disagreeing with you at this point.
Really? How? Okay. Yeah. Who's got the? Who is okay? 760-283-0846 for anyone who's out there listening right now. Who's got the best throw in football? And we'll ask Gary Fetter when he comes on at 11:30 with us. Gary Fetter, New York Jets super fan. And another...
Oh, wait, Randy, hold up. Before you go on, I have to correct it. No, she thought she said throw.
Oh, no.
No, she agrees with the throw. She agrees with the throw entirely.
I still think it's a great conversation. It's a useless conversation because it doesn't really do anything. But and we're not really making any real points by saying it. But I really do think he might have the best throw in football. I think that might be the rookie from the Giants last year, our second year man, Prince. I can't pronounce his last name. I'm not going to try. Yeah, him too. He had a good
do it out.
Oh, let me get my list out. Anyway, the other NFL news, the Jacksonville Jaguars' Maurice Jones-Drew finally ends holdout. He'll be ready for week one of the NFL season. So, fantasy football people, do your happy dance, happy dance, happy dance.
Well, you know, while we're talking about fantasy football, then why don't we start off the show, though, before we get into the nitty-gritty of football. Let's do what we like to do and let's talk about fantasy because I just got done with my fantasy draft. I know you've got done with your fantasy draft. You know, I think where I'm going with this, it's time to compare teams, Randy.
Oh, here we go. All right, let me pull my team up. With all that being said, also, we're going to break down some of these divisions, some of the better teams in the NFL. We're going to make our predict of who's in the playoffs, who's sitting out, who's going to go to the Super Bowl, who's going to lose the Super Bowl, who's going to win the Super Bowl, what's Jose going to yell at me about, and why am I just going to shake my head in disgust. All that is still coming up here on Real Sports Talk Radio. Remember, you can find us at Twitter, at Angry Jose, at Arzelia BSP, and Jose, you're sort of going to be impressed with my teams. I think I've made you proud. You know, I spoke to my boy Senor Casper, who he is the longest running fantasy football person that I know of. And when he and I spoke about our fantasy teams, he heard both of my teams, and he said that I am turning into a draft whiz. And I take that very much as a compliment. I'm in two leagues. How many leagues are you in?
Right now, I've just finished one, and I got my main one coming up on Tuesday, which is more of a very serious one. There's a lot of stakes involved. But I actually, for the first time in a long time, I did a solo draft because for the last few years I've been working with a partner. So it was nice to get back to just doing it on your own, you know, picking guys you would pick and not necessarily have to worry about the dreaded, I don't get guys from this team syndrome, which I can't stand. But so I got to say, I was actually quite impressed with myself because not only did I basically have a plan of attack, I went with it the whole draft and was able to make picks within like 10 seconds of me actually being on the clock. So I was quite happy with that.
Well, let's hear your. What do you want to do? I have two teams. Do you have one?
Let's yours first, and then we'll get into mine, and I'll give you a bonus one that I got over here, and you can tell me which team is better.
Okay. I'm in two leagues. One's a friend league, and then there's a league that I run. My friend's league that I'm in. Why don't we do this? Since I'll do one of my teams, your team, we'll close out with the other one of my teams, and we'll have. By that point, we're going to have to take a break from this because Gary Federer will be on in 9 minutes with us.
All right. So let's. We'll get him in real fast then.
Okay, this team, quarterback Cam Newton, and keep in mind that was the number nine pick. My wide receivers will be Brandon Marshall and A.J. Green. Running back situation, Matt Forte and Frank Gore. Starting tight end will be Vernon Davis, and my two option positions will be Percy Harvin and Santonio Holmes. On my bench, I have Matt Schaub, Anquan Boldin, D'Angelo Williams, Santana Moss, Felix Jones, and Owen Daniels. I hate the kicker position. If I was able to eliminate it, I would. And then the defenses I have, my backup defense is the Dallas Cowboys, and my starting defense is the Houston.
Okay. How many people in this league, though, the team you just read out?
10.
10? Okay. All right. Let me give you mine real fast. Mine is also a 10-team league. My starting quarterback is Michael Vick. I'm not happy about it, but Michael Vick. My two running backs are Sean McCoy and Darren Sproles. My flex player at this moment is Percy Harvin. My two starting wideouts are Roddy White and Antonio Brown. Tight end is Rob Gronkowski. My kicker is Matt Prater. And my starting defense is the Houston Texans. My bench is Ben Tate, Andrew Luck, Torrey Smith, D'Angelo Williams, the Denver defense, and Kobe Fleener.
Not bad. Not bad. Going back to the first, I do like the fact that, you know, you did take Percy Harvin. I think he's going to have a bounce back season that he did from last year.
He actually had a pretty good season last year. So that's only, I think we both think the world of this guy. I think we think he's a solid talent.
Well, and my team and my draft, now keep in mind we have a lot of players in this league. I don't mean like teams. I mean like we can pick a lot of guys.
Yeah.
Here is my starting lineups. I have up to three quarterbacks. There's a quarterback option position.
Yeah.
So you have two, and you start two quarterbacks. So I have Aaron Rodgers, Victor Cruz, Brandon Marshall, and Marquise Colston. My two starting running backs, and this is where everyone's been giving me a cringing look, has been Adrian Peterson and Michael Turner. Vernon Davis.
I give you a cringing look too, but.
Yeah. So Vernon Davis is the starting tight end, and then my three option positions are Nate Watson, Ben Tate, Mario Manningham, and the third quarterback position is Ryan Fitzpatrick. The bench is Brent Celek, Randy Moss, Felix Jones, the ever concussion dangerous Austin Colley, and David Nelson from Buffalo. And I picked the Chicago defense. My backup defense is the Houston defense, and I actually picked the New England defense as a third option defense. Because I have a feeling that Chicago or Houston is not going to be living up to that expectation. I have a feeling because Houston lost Mario Williams that they're going to take a step back defensively. But
I don't agree with you on that necessarily, but we'll hit on that another time. Real fast, two things I wanted to get out before we go on. First, anytime you have to name a player by their team, or after you say a player's name and then say the team, you know it's not a good pick. Just one. Second,
which one did I do
special
for?
Bonus pick draft team by my... My aficionado wife with fantasy football. This is her team real fast. Matt, and this is a 14-team league. Matt Stafford, Rob Gronkowski, Willis McGahee, Victor Cruz, Jeremy Maclin, Ben Tate, Malcolm Floyd, Toby Gerhart, Houston defense, Andy Dalton, Stephen Gronkowski, Jared Cook, Nate Burleson, and Bernard Scott.
That's not a bad team.
Not a bad team. A little worried about the running backs.
Yeah, I think there's a reason to worry about the running backs there. I will tell you that I think the well, first off, which player did I name by his team?
David Nelson. You basically said David Nelson from Buffalo. Anytime you say, when you phrase it like that, you may not be too happy with that pick. Everyone should know the player you took.
I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not arguing with that fact.
I'm glad you're not arguing because it's a fact.
Yeah, well, with that being
said. He's a good player, but you know you're not strong on the guy if you have to say he's from whatever, wherever he plays at. Everyone should know where he plays at. By the way, also, because I don't know where he went in your draft, in the draft I did yesterday, NJD went in the sixth round.
Well, because what was going on with them, I think if you knew what was going on with them, you would. If they said, okay, he's going to come back this week, you know, the week of the first season, just say, okay, you know, it's going to take him 2 weeks to get in shape, and, you know, it's game. Boom. Like last year with Chris Johnson, Chris Johnson had that long holdout for so long.
And he still won in the first round. I mean, I could tell you why I didn't pick him. I have real legitimate reasons why I didn't pick him right off the bat. I mean, which would be the same reasons why you wouldn't necessarily pick the guy, because we all know how this works. You hold out, you're not going to play well. We all know this. But the guys I was with in this league, I'm telling you right now, there's only like two guys I really am a little worried about. And the one guy I'm worried about picked six running backs in his draft just because he wants to trade bait.
You know, I do have a very, very, very good question for you about fantasy football. Does what you see on a show like Hard Knocks and some of these other shows on the NFL Network and some of these other news reports, does that really affect your thinking of drafts, or do you usually end up going by impulse, or how do you, what's your strategy, or do you just, like, you know, flip a coin and say, okay, Victor Cruz, Brandon Marshall, okay, Victor Cruz?
Nah, you know what? You should always pay attention to any information you can get, because any information is good information. But when you do your draft, and it's what I always tell people when I help them with their drafts, make sure you have a plan of attack and make sure you have a pretty good idea of who you're going to get. Target people. This is what I did yesterday, all day. I got every person I targeted. In my personal draft book that I did for my wife as well, I got three of the top 14 players in my draft book. Three. I can tell you right now, no one else in that league I was in got more than one. So target guys, know where you want to get them. If you have to go a little early to get them, that's fine, but don't go too crazy because you might miss out on a better player. The last pick in our draft yesterday, the last two picks, just so you know, were Anquan Boldin and Mike Williams from Tampa Bay. Now, the guy who drafted Mike Williams was the same guy that drafted the six running backs because he feels he's going to have trade opportunities. And he actually had the gall to tell me that this is going to be one of the best receivers out in football this year because Vincent Jackson, I believe, is in Tampa Bay, so they're not going to pay attention to Mike Williams. What he seems to not understand, though, is that Mike Williams didn't have a great year last year, and he wasn't considered the number one receiver in Tampa Bay last year. So I don't know where he's getting this train of thought. What I also found a little disrespectful also was that, in fantasy football terms, so it's all in good fun, was that he kind of made a mocking remark at the fact that I actually took D'Angelo Williams as one of my running backs. And the guy's a backup for me, obviously, if you heard the rest of my team. But for the same reasons that he's saying Mike Williams would be good is the same reason he's saying why D'Angelo Williams would be bad. So it's kind of a contradictory thing. What that's telling me is that this guy is scared of my team already. You okay there? Randy?
I apologize. We had some technical difficulties. We're back on Real Sports Radio. Sorry about that, folks. We'll take care of that. We'll make sure that never happens again. Anyway, Jose will be back on here in about a minute. Real Sports Talk Radio. We were talking about how people choose to do the fantasy football draft, and how things just work that way, and way things have been going, how people choose their fantasy football drafts. As we await the return of Jose Padilla and our special guest Gary Fetters coming on. So, anyways, fantasy football is probably one of the most popular, fun activities in the world. I think everybody loves doing flag football fantasy. That's the second time I said flag football in about 5 minutes. I don't know why I want to talk about flag football. Jose is back with us. We had some technical problems there, buddy.
You said that, Randy?
I said we had some technical problems.
Yeah, I guess people don't want to hear me talking anymore, huh?
Yeah, I guess talking is a very, very, like, it was just one of those things where all of a sudden I just started hearing, this little sound, and I looked down at my internet connection, all of a sudden the internet connection died. And I was wow. It's probably because I was insulting fantasy football, because apparently fantasy football is God's favorite game. And I'm not trying to bring religion or Jesus or anybody else into this whole thing. That's certainly not my point of what I'm trying to do.
So anyway,
I asked you a question about your method of football.
Oh, wow. You didn't get any of that?
No, I got nothing.
Man.
I have to start all over.
All right. Basically, just have a plan of attack. Target guys you want, and don't be scared to take them a little early. You know, because essentially this is your team, so you want to make sure you have guys that you feel will put you in a position to compete and win on a week-in, week-out basis. So that's what I basically try to tell everyone when I'm helping them with their drafts. I try to instill that into a lot of people, because I know there's a lot of rules, but it's just like with anything else, you got to go with your gut sometimes, and sometimes you got to kind of go off the page. So, just plan of attack, target guys you want, and don't be scared to grab someone a little earlier than you should, because eventually, even if you get a guy who would have been a fifth-round pick, you pick him in the third or fourth round, and they do great for you, people are still going to make fun of you because you picked them a little earlier than you should. The case study for this is with me always is Pierre Garçon. So, you know what? If the guy does good for you, it doesn't matter. Just, take him when you think, just if you think you're going to get him, you want to get the guy, and you think you might lose him if you wait a little longer, just get them when you feel it's the right time. Never worry about what other people are going to say, because that's part of the mental game of fantasy football.
Well, I get made fun of for everything else, so this should be nothing new. I'm just – my strategy is always end up being probably the best player available, and also who you think is going to help you the best. And also how much of the bye week schedule you think has to do with it as well.
It's taken a lot more precedence than I thought it ever would. So, yeah, it's definitely – you always have to account for that as well, because you don't want to have four guys on your team that all have the same bye week, So that's why you can't load up on a particular team anymore. I think a lot of guys used to do that, even before the bye weeks would come. They would probably, stack up on one team where they felt that the offense was going to be really good. You got a receiver, running back, quarterback, you move on from there. Now with the bye weeks, you can still do it, but it makes it a little harder because – now you got to make sure you get at least somewhat decent complementary players to fill in those spots when you have to. So you definitely do have to take that into account as well. And I can tell you right now, with the team I have four guys alone that I'm going to have to replace 1 week. So not the greatest thing in the world, but I felt with the way I drafted, I was able to at least cover for that with players I feel comfortable playing on any given week.
Well, I have total faith in you.
my aficionado wife thinks it's a toss-up. So
does she know that you call her the aficionado wife?
Oh, she's right here right now. She wants to say something. You think it'd be okay if she says something?
Sure, why not?
I think it's a toss-up when you draft your team, because you can draft a team and have one bad week and have the rest of your season be fantastic, Or you can draft someone who's kind of so-so to fill in the gaps, and your team isn't that great. So it's a toss-up.
Do you know that he calls you the aficionado wife?
I told him to, because I am knowledge in everything.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure you knew what he was calling you behind your back, so I just wanted to make sure you knew.
You know, by the way, she speaks from experience with this, by the way. She definitely will tell you. She dominated her league last year, only to lose in the first round of the playoffs because of certain people decided not to play in the last week of the season.
Well, I will tell you that I think you never told me what you thought of my teams. So I'm a little hurt by that, first off. I do feel tears.
I'm sorry. We've spoken privately about this. I think you actually got really good teams. I usually mock your teams, but this year they're actually pretty solid. I think we actually have some of the same guys, actually.
Well, yeah, Percy Harvin is on one of the teams. I'm very, very excited about this. Everyone's hating the fact that I picked Michael Turner and Adrian Peterson on the same team.
I don't think it's a hate issue. It's more of is that going to really happen? Is Peterson going to play well because he's coming back from an injury? I think that's more of the issue. But I think you got solid guys there, especially if they all stay healthy.
It's gonna be an interesting way to see all this and see how the whole thing plays out. I think it's time for us to dive in a little bit and attack some of these divisions. I don't know how you feel about that aspect of it.
Let's go for it, man. Let's go for it.
Are you sure that you're ready for this?
I'm as ready as I'm ever going to be, so.
No, that's fine. I think that pretty much just gave me enough confidence to want to not jump off a bridge at that point. Okay. We are going to start. I think we need music. I can't work without music at this point. Do you agree or disagree?
I love music. I really do. I love good music.
Okay. I feel a little better now.
Well,
I feel like right now I'm ready to turn on NBC right now and get all sorts of fired up about this. Anyway. Last week we broke down the Wests a little bit. You know, we spoke about Kansas City, Oakland, San Diego, and Denver. This division, what are we doing here? What are we picking in this division?
Which one you want to start with first?
The AFC West.
All right. You want to go first, or you want me to?
Go for it. I would love to hear your words of wisdom.
Well, after watching all the preseason games and everything, I solidly can say that I believe Denver is going to win this division. And yes, it's because of Peyton Manning. And there's no other way to put it, but he looks like he's ready to go. So I think Denver has a great defense. Have Peyton Manning. Great defense, Peyton Manning equals a big-time ride. So we're just going to go with that. I like their receivers. I think there's not a star in that group, unless you want to say Demaryius Thomas is a star, but they're all solid guys. I especially love Eric Decker. After that, the rest of this division is a crapshoot. I'm not a big fan of Kansas City. I like their running back. I like Jamaal Charles. I'm just hoping he's going to stay healthy. I don't like Matt Castle. And I don't think there's anyone on that roster that could even challenge him for a spot. I will say this. I thought Castle was going to be someone that, if put in the right situation, could be a good quarterback, but after watching now the last couple of years, and I'm not drinking that milk anymore. So I'm not a big supporter of Castle in any way. I think he has a lot of talent around him, but I don't think he has the talent to work with that talent. Oakland, to me, I think this is going to be sort of a wait and see approach now because, as we all Al Davis is no longer around. God bless him. But they've been an enigma for so long. I just can't see them doing anything extraordinary this year. I love Darren McFadden. They have a lot of speed at the wide opposition. They have a pretty decent defense, but their secondary is a little shaky. So I'm not seeing any real progress from them. San Diego is the wild card in all this, and I'm not saying wild card as far as team, as far as playoff season, but just wild card in general, challenging Denver, because they were so good for so long, you know. But last year there was a lot of cracks. Phillip Rivers actually had a really bad year, and if, you know, speaking fantasy football wise, it really hurt me considerably. I'm not so sure he's gonna have a bad year like that, but I'm not so sure we're ever gonna see the really good side of Phillip Rivers anymore. I'm not great. I'm not sold on their defense. I'm not sold on Ryan Matthews being the number one back. So when push comes to shove, Denver is definitely the division winner in the West. I'll take San Diego because I just think the quarterback situation is better than Kansas City and Oakland to round out the division.
Okay, I think that's fair. Here's my opinion on the whole entire thing. Matt Castle in Kansas City, it just seems like it hasn't worked. Castle had his most success when he was in New England, obviously, taking that team almost to the playoffs. This last season, the team was 7-9, 3-5 at home, 4-4 on the road. They won their last game of the season. They're 4-8 in the conference. And 3-3 in the division. That whole division last year is look. Listen to the records. 8-8. Like Denver 8-8 wins the division. San Diego 8-8. Oakland 8-8. Kansas City 7-9. I don't know if you're going to find a more balanced division than this one.
Well, you're being friendly when you say balanced. I would say a more crappy division, but.
No, crappy was the year that Seattle wins the division at 7-9. And host the New Orleans Saints.
You know what? You're right about that. But they actually did win that game, too. So let's be fair. They did win that game.
I am being fair. Right now, I think we need to put this on hold and go to the AFC East and invite in our good friend of the show, the ruler of the MetLife for the New York Jets, our good buddy Gary Fetter. Gary, how are you today, buddy?
Hello, RZ. How are we doing today?
Good. You're also on the line with our good friend Jose Padilla.
Hello, Jose. How are we?
Jose's still. Yeah, I hear you. I hear you fine. Jose, you still with us? You might have lost.
Jose wants nothing to do with me.
Well, I sort of understand that. You know, Jose, are you with us right now?
Yes, I don't know. It just dropped for a second, but I'm back on.
Okay, yeah. So, you know, we have Gary Fetter with us. Gary is what I like to call the Jets aficionado. Knows everything about the New York football. See, he knows who led the team in facial hair last year. It's you know, that's how detailed Gary gets with the New York football Jets. Now, Gary, talk to me a little bit about this division. The Patriots, the Jets, the Dolphins, and the Bills. Obviously, you have a little bit of a slant because of your love for green. Talk to me about this year's Jets team and how it compares to last year's team, and do they have a shot of winning this division?
Well, I think that would be definitely optimistic. I do think that they're going to be better. I think that last year they were 8-8, and it seemed like everything went wrong. According to everybody in the media, they're being treated as if they were a 3-13 team, when in reality they were at 1.8-5, struggled down the stretch, lost their last three games. We can definitely recap all that for sure. The main thing that I see with this team, though, to be honest with you, RZ, is that, well, everybody talks about, you know, the failings of the offense, the backup quarterback, who I refuse to even discuss by name, and, you know, some of the other problems with the offense. You know, this, I really, truly think, has a good chance of being the best defense that Rex Ryan has fielded in his fourth year now. With the Jets, they really have addressed the defensive line in the last 2 years in the draft. That has actually gone from a position of weakness to a position of strength. They have, you know, 5-6 defensive linemen that can all stop the run, can rush the passer. One thing that you've noticed if you watch anything but the offense in the preseason is that they had really good pressure from the front four, which is something that they could never do in their first 3 years. They always had to kind of send 5 or 6 guys, a couple linebackers, and leave themselves vulnerable. So we all know, obviously, the cornerbacks are going to be what they are. Obviously, they have all-world Darrell Revis, if he decides not to hold out. And Cromartie, you know, with no technique, is still a freakishly good athlete and makes babies left and right. So, you know, the cornerback position is pretty set. And safety, you know, they brought in LaRon Landry. and Jeremiah Bell to replace Jim Leonard, and Eric Smith is nicked up a little bit from the preseason, but you know, those two guys are freakishly athletic. If they can stay healthy, I think they're only going to help things out. So when you look at the defense as a whole, I think it's going to be the best of the 4 years. And to be honest with you, the first 3 years were pretty good on the defensive side. We can get to the offense now if you got a minute. You know, things are obviously not looking great. Everybody makes a big deal out of the fact that they haven't scored a touchdown, or they scored one meaningless touchdown in the fourth game. You know, I don't put too much stock in the preseason. The preseason stat that I've given to everybody who's kind of, you know, made it the most important thing in the world is, you know, the 0-16 Lions went 4-0 in the preseason that year. So, I mean, how much stock can you really put in it? You know, I've seen plenty of Jet teams in my years go 4-0 in the preseason and then win only four games in the regular season. So, you know, wins and losses really don't matter in the preseason. Yeah, I would like to have seen a better result when the first team is in there as far as getting the ball in the end zone. But the only game that they looked good was in that third game. They moved the ball pretty well. They actually drove the field, wound up attempting four field goals, making three of them while the first team was in. So, I mean, it's not like they weren't moving the ball against Carolina. And, you know, being that Wayne Hunter is now out of town, you know, hopefully the offensive line can sort of revert back to when they were a little bit better. You know, if you look at last year, the Brickashaw Ferguson made the Pro Bowl last year, which is an absolute joke. The guy had an absolutely down year for, you know, he's been a good player for 5-6 years, but this was his worst year by far. He made the Pro Bowl based on name. You know, so that definitely, you know, was cause for concern last year. I do think if he reverts back to where he normally plays, there's going to be an improvement right there. If you look at Nick Mangold, he was banged up last year, so him coming back and hopefully being healthy will definitely improve things. Brandon Moore was battling hip surgery last year, so him, you know, him being healthier this year will definitely help. Slauson is what he is, and they upgraded theoretically just by getting rid of Wayne Hunter at right guard, or at right tackle, excuse me. So, you know, when you look at those things, I really think that you're going to see some improvement on the offensive line, even if it just gets back to its old self. That's going to be a big positive from last year. And the other thing that I think is the biggest thing to note is that Schottenheimer is now no longer here. And you brought in a guy, Tony Sperano, who is an offensive line guy, and his priority will be anything and everything to help the offensive line, whether it's leaving in an extra tight end or running back to chip. You know, they're not going to leave Sanchez out there to die, which is what they did last year. And that's only going to help his performance. He actually had a really high completion percentage in the preseason. Yes, everybody's going to complain that there are only checkdowns, but, you know, I mean, he is completing his passes. Everybody talks about accuracy. I think it was right around 68%. Granted, no touchdowns, and he had a couple of interceptions, one of which wasn't his fault, one of which was. You know, I do think if he's a better quarterback than everybody gives him credit for. So...
I need a record prediction from you.
You need a record prediction. I'm an optimistic Jet fan. There's usually the two kinds of Jet fans. There's, you know, pessimistic Jet fans, and then there's me. So when it comes to my prediction, I think that if they can survive things early on, their schedule, if you look at it, is really tough at the outstart. You know, the Buffalo Bills, obviously, you know, who knows with them? They're potentially everybody's darling in terms of, you know, predictions for this year. So they're going to be a tough opening game. They have Pittsburgh early. They have Houston and San Francisco. The nice thing about those games is those are at home. Pittsburgh's on the road, but Houston and San Francisco, I believe in weeks 4 and 5, are at home. So, and then if you look at the schedule, to be honest with you, I don't have it in front of me, but I pretty much have it memorized. They have a lot of games that are there. They have a lot of games that are very winnable towards the back end of the season. If you look at, they play Jacksonville, they play Tennessee, they play, I think they have a Miami in there at the middle of the season. A bunch of games, if Arizona's in there, St. Louis, I mean, there's a lot of games that you can see them winning. They're in Seattle, which is tough to play, but Seattle, I mean, who knows with them? They're always kind of up and down. So I really think that if they can survive the first 5-6 games and maybe kind of be sitting there at 3-3, that, who knows, maybe they can get to 10 wins. I do think it's possible. I think that this defense is going to be very good in 14, 15 of the 16 games. They'll have a stinker, probably one of the games against New England, and probably one other game, maybe Houston, something like that. But But those are games that you figure they're going to have a tough time winning anyway. I feel like in the other games, they really can cause havoc this year more than in years past. So I'm optimistically going to say anywhere between 8 and 10 wins, and I'll say 10 just because, you know, they're my Jets.
Okay, and then it goes to the question is who will be the quarterback? Will they be brought down the field by Sanchez or by Tebow?
Who? Who are you talking about? I really don't want to talk about the backup quarterback. It's really, you know what? I honestly, and this is going to sound sickening, I've actually rooted for Tim Tebow to fail in the preseason because he's not a quarterback. And in the best interest of the team, if he's taking snaps under center on a consistent basis, A, it means that Mark Sanchez has failed them, which I don't think will happen. And B, I don't think that he has the ability to get it done. I've never really watched him consistently until this preseason, you know, on a game-by-game basis. Some of the throws that he makes are absolutely atrocious. I mean, I've seen him throw swing passes to the running backs 5 yards above their head. That's impossible to do if you were trying to do. So, I really think that they're going to, you know, I really think that the best interest of the team is that Sanchez is a quarterback. You know, there's going to be obviously immense pressure from all of the God-loving Tim Tebow fans that, you know, that are out there. And obviously, they basically, they don't care about anything to do with the Jets as long as their quarterback is on the field. Now, that being said, I do think there are some ways that you can use him successfully, mix him in. You know, I was a big proponent of Brad Smith when he was here. I thought that everybody, you know, people tended to complain about him, but there's really nothing wrong with bringing him in to run a wildcat play and getting 8 yards on first down. I mean, that's a positive play. And Brad Smith was good at that, and I do think that Tebow can succeed in that type of a role. But I just don't think so on a consistent basis. I really think that if he sees the field for more than, you know, a half dozen plays a game, it's probably going to be because Sanchez isn't doing well.
Jose, you have anything for our Jets aficionado?
Let me just ask you this. Let's just say after the first 4 weeks of the season, they're 1-3, and they bring Tebow in, and they actually start winning, even though it looks completely atrocious. Are you going to be happy with this?
Well, yeah, I think, look, at the end of the day, one of the reasons why I didn't root for him in the preseason was because it's the preseason and it really doesn't matter if they win. If he's taking snaps under center, sure, I want him to throw a touchdown pass. I want him to run for a first down. I mean, that's obvious. I mean, that goes, you know, first and foremost, I'm a fan of the team. So, you know, Jerry Seinfeld always said you root for the uniform. So I will be rooting for the uniform in that scenario. I just don't think, if you had to ask me, in my honest opinion, if he can consistently, you know, win, I don't think that he can do that. I mean, if you look at last year, okay, both of these quarterbacks, not just Sanchez, was 8-5 and lost their last three games. Okay, they actually wound up losing their last three games to Denver, and just because they play in a division that doesn't have New England, they happen to back into the playoffs, as the term that we often use so many times. So, you know, I don't think that Tim Tebow was exactly, you know, ridiculously good. I mean, they were playing in Denver in the thin air, where he had a competitive advantage from that standpoint. He had a field goal kicker who was making 60-yard field goals left and right for him, so he only had to drive the ball to about the 45-50-yard line. So, you know, I think that everything was stacked in his favor last year. Now, there are some aspects of the Jets team that are consistent with that. They do have a big-time defense, I think, so that would definitely help. I don't think he would have to put up more than 13 points to win games on a consistent basis, but I think that's something that Sanchez can do. I just hope that he doesn't get run out of town if he goes 1-3.
Let's just be fair, though, and you definitely bring up valid points, but I want to be fair, getting back to the whole Tebow thing real fast, and I know you don't want to talk about it. With Denver, they did start off 1-4, so Kyle Orton had those same advantages that Tebow had last year, and that team was not good. The thing with Tebow is, and Randy will tell you, I am fascinated by the things that Tebow does. I admire the guy because I think the guy's a winner, and that's something you know, despite how he throws, despite how he looks, the guy just always manages to win, and I think that's something that has been missing with this organization for a long time. And I like Sanchez too, but sometimes I look at Sanchez, I look the way he plays, and maybe that's because of the positions he was put in. I don't see winner. With Tebow, there's never a doubt in my mind. If the game is even remotely close, you're probably going to win the game.
I mean, I appreciate that, obviously. I mean, that's his reputation, whether it's college or last year with Denver. But, I mean, I look at 3 years of quarterbacking for Mark Sanchez. The first 2 years he went to the AFC Championship game, so that, by definition, is, you know, winning in terms of you know, successful season, you know, obviously making progress, having, you know, a stone's throw at least at a Super Bowl. And I look at last year as everything went wrong, and he still managed to win 8 games with the team. So how, you know, if Tebow is a winner, then is Sanchez not?
Well,
I just think that there's something. I think people follow him more. I think he's one of those guys that your defense, which is the core of this Jet team, is their defense. I've already seen rumblings that they seem to like him more than Sanchez. Now, you know, that's people talking. Who knows? You know, you just hear these rumblings. These, you know, like, oh, you know, he's one of them. Like, oh, he's one of the guys that hangs with us. He lifts with us. And at the end of the day, that means nothing. But to me, with the way that Jet locker room is perceived to be, we don't really know what's going on because we don't get to see the inside of it. There might be something to that. There might be. Now, I want Sanchez to succeed because I think he is a very good quarterback. I think he gets a lot of crap. And if you really look at it, he's kind of already in the same kind of time frame that Eli was. This is the same stuff we were talking about with Eli when he went into his fourth year. So I think there is something to be said about that.
Yeah, I mean, I do think it's time, and I do think he's growing. The other thing that also people don't realize is Sanchez only played 1 year in college, so he's a young fourth-year quarterback. He was a young rookie, a young second-year quarterback. So he's, maturation-wise, he still has a ways to go, which is, I think, you know, they've invested heavily in him. So I think it's worth them sort of seeing that investment out. I don't think that he's been bad to the point where it's worth, you know, cutting your losses, so to speak. And I also don't think that, you know, the example that you used of, you know, 1-3, I don't think 4 games this year is enough to really say, oh, you know, we don't think that he's long-term the answer, good or bad.
I agree with you. I'm just thinking, though, I'm looking at the way, as I feel that Rex Ryan is looking at this, I almost get the feeling it's not going to take much for them to put Tebow in if it gets to that point. That's the way it looks to me, that it may not take much.
I hope you're wrong. Let's put it that way. I really hope you're wrong.
I hope I'm wrong too, because I want to see Sanchez succeed. But
more,
to me, it feels
like
one of those things. Where,
I think it's bad for the team if you're right. Let's put it that way.
I hope, because I just feel that they didn't just bring this guy in to run just 5 to 10 plays a game. I don't believe that for a second.
You're forgetting that he is the punt protector, so that obviously, you know.
That is true. You're right about that. But I just feel that they didn't bring him in just for, like, certain plays. I think in the long run, I wonder sometimes if maybe this staff is not necessarily completely sold on Sanchez. And when Rex Ryan came in, it was more of a, yeah, you know, yes, sir, Woody Johnson, you know, you want Sanchez in here? Yeah, I think he's a great quarterback. And now it's kind of like, you know what, maybe I'm not so high on this guy anymore. That's really what concerns me. I wonder if the staff even actually really believes in Sanchez.
You know what, I think that they do. I mean, if you look back, I mean, Sanchez was Rex Ryan's first pick when he was here, right? He got announced as the coach, and that draft, he was the first pick of the draft that they took. So, you know, I think that they are committed to him for the long haul. I do agree from your standpoint that there are some aspects of the decisions that they've made that sort of lead you to believe what you're saying, and that they haven't provided him with any support. I mean, if you watch that game last year against the Baltimore Ravens, he had no chance. I mean, he was a sitting duck back there. He was actually a running for his life duck. And eventually he looked like a chicken with no head running around. I mean, it was scary to watch. So, you know, hopefully Sperano will support that, give him some time to throw. You know, I do think he had a good amount of time to throw in the Carolina game, and he looked good. I mean, even the game against the Giants, he threw the interception, obviously, we know, in the preseason. He was 9 of 11 before that. He moved the ball a little bit. Nothing crazy. I'm looking at it, obviously, from the optimistic standpoint. Pessimistic standpoint is they didn't get any points, of course. So, you know, you look at it that way. But, you know, I do think that they can find a way to win with him. You know, he's not the type of quarterback that is going to be the reason why you win. But I also think that you can win with him. I think that he's good enough, as we've seen in year one and year two, that if you limit his mistakes, that, you know, with this type of a defense, and hopefully if there's any semblance of a running game, that you can win with him.
You know, it's funny, too. You said everything went wrong with the Jets last year. And, you know, I'm wondering, like you said before, if Tebow becomes a starting quarterback of this football team. It might have some instant success, but also I think the Denver Broncos knew that this was a temporary fix. If for some reason Tim Tebow becomes the starting quarterback and Mark Sanchez is on the bench, is it, would it turn into one of those situations where you can get away with 1 or 2 years with Tebow and then you have to start this process all over again?
Well, I think that Peyton Manning obviously made that a very easy decision, you know, once they got him. I don't think that that the Jets are going to luck into any scenario like that. But, you know, yeah, I think there's a certain aspect of he would be a band-aid.
And then I have to ask you this question. And I used this analogy last week with Jose when we were on air. I told him I watched the first two preseason games with both the Jets and the Giants when the Jets were playing Cincinnati and the Giants were playing the Jaguars, and we had the TVs on at the restaurant side by side, and I jokingly said that the Giants and the Jets, you see such a difference of parallel with the teams where the Giants filled the holes which they needed to in the offseason, and the problems that the Jets had on the field, they just brought in a backup quarterback.
Like, yeah, I think that there's a certain aspect of that. I agree with you that, you know, backup quarterback was not a priority. It should never be a priority. I mean, I think it's a gimmick. Obviously, everybody can point to selling tickets and PSLs and everything, you know, PR that it's related to selling jerseys and everything like that. But, you know, I do think a couple of the points that I made earlier, they've addressed safety, which is a problem spot. They addressed wide receiver slightly with Stephen Hill in the draft. He's had a couple of drops, but he's actually been pretty good. He had over 100 yards receiving in the preseason in, you know, a little over a game if you added up all the first-team offense. And that's 100 yards on the Jets is actually a lot for receiving, considering they don't really throw the ball all over the place like a lot of teams in today's league. So, you know, and I think from the defensive side of the ball, they've addressed the defensive line much more than people are realizing. You know, they were really, really thin in the last few years and had success while being thin on defensive line, and now it's actually a position of strength. Copels has actually had a really good preseason. He's had a sack in every game, in all four games. He had a strip sack of Cam Newton, which is tough to do, as we know, and he's looked pretty good. He's played the run, he's played the pass, obviously. He's been very, very impressive. You know, Muhammad Wilkerson, their first-round pick last year, was very good last year, very solid, not spectacular, and they've said that he's actually improved greatly. So, you know, I do think that they have some areas that are turning into strengths. And, you know, obviously, I think the offensive line, they were hoping at this point to be a self-correcting type of a thing where, you know, if everybody just kind of plays where they used to, that they're going to be better this year.
In the AFC East, New England, Miami, and Buffalo, your opinions on some of their offseason moves and where you see the Jets stack up with them?
Sure. Well, let's start with New England. They obviously won a division last year. There's a couple concerns that I have with New England. I mean, obviously, we know what they can do through the air. They're a very good team. You know, defensively, they made a couple of big draft picks where they got guys they can get after the quarterback, so they've hopefully, for their sake, improved. For my sake, hopefully they didn't. But, you know, when I look at them, I see two, you know, issues that are starting to develop with them. If you watch them in the preseason, on the offensive line, they had a really, really tough time keeping Brady upright. He got really, really banged around in the first three games, if you look at that. So from that standpoint, you know, there's always an issue there. And the other issue is, I think, with the replacement officials this year, I don't know if Kraft has paid them off like he paid off the regular officials. So we'll see what happens with that. And as far as the other couple teams in the AFC East, I do think that New England is going to probably be the best team in the division. You know, just from the pure who can throw the ball the best standpoint, they're clearly number one, which obviously is the way of the league now. Buffalo, I mean, everybody seems like Buffalo is all of a sudden the darlings of the world. But, you know, from the standpoint that I see is Ryan Fitzpatrick. I mean, what is he? Is he great? I mean, or does he just have high SAT scores? You know, they signed Mario Williams. Their front seven is supposed to be really, really good. You know, Mario Williams, I think, was obviously their big signing this year, kind of coming into the year. I mean, he was hurt half of last year, so who knows how reliable he is. Is he going to play all 16 games, or is he going to play five games and be hurt for the season? I mean, you never know with him. So we'll see what happens. And then Miami, You know, they got all sorts of problems. I mean, they're starting a rookie, so that obviously is going to, you know, mean some growing pains for them, and we'll see what happens. But, you know, I think New England is obviously, I would say, the clear-cut favorite. Optimistically, I would throw the Jets in there, but I don't think it's realistic at this point. I'd have to see it to believe it. And then, you know, I would say the Jets and Buffalo are going to be somewhere battling for second place, maybe a sniff at a wild card for each of them. Hello?
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 Hello, you still there, Gary?
Hello?
I think we're having another issue with the
line. I'm gonna run, actually, so.
Can you hear me? Hello? Show went down again.
Wow, we just can't seem to have enough technical problems today. We're working on this. Our tech people are working on this to make sure that this doesn't happen again. I apologize. But I can't wait to hear the archive of the radio here about Back Sports Page Radio, Real Sports Talk. Sorry about that. We were talking with Gary Fetter. I think we've lost Gary for the day. I'll find out if we have Jose back with us. Yeah, some interesting points about the Jets. I do think Tebow's going to be the starting quarterback by the end of the season. Contrary to what Gary feels, I don't see how this is going to work out. Just thanked everybody. It was just one of those things where I just do think that Tebow is going to be the starting quarterback eventually of the Jets. It's just one of those things where it's going to happen. And It is what it is. We'll feel what happens. We'll see what happens going forward with the Jets. Moving forward here with our show, it's just
hey,
it's one of those things. Jose,
hey, what's up, Randy?
This technical issue. Maybe it's the move from 11 o'clock. The computer's not used to it.
It's possible.
Anyways, we did lose Gary. Gary is done for the day. Brought some interesting points up. He really, really broke down the Jets, which I thought was very, very good.
Yeah, I think he was solid. I think he had a very, very strong assessment of the team. I do think, and admittedly, he admitted it. He was very optimistic. I think 10 wins on this team would be no short of a grandiose expectations, in my opinion.
I don't think 10 wins, and I do think Tebow will eventually be the starting quarterback of the New York Jets.
As do I.
Let's go across the to the NFC East with the New York Football Giants. You and I watch this team pretty consistently, and is it safe to say that are they on the road to a second straight playoff run, or are we looking at them missing out, or are we talking first round bye? What do you think?
Well, I like the fact that the team has gotten faster. To me, this team is capable of doing a lot of great things, but as we both know, this team is also capable of laying the big goose egg, and it's more than capable of doing that. So I just think it depends if it's going to be the same old Giants where they play up to their competition, or we're finally going to get that team that really dominates where they should.
Do you feel as a Giant fan that every single time we just can't lose a game? We have to get destroyed. And we're more surprised when we do actually have success.
You know what? I think as being Giant fans for as long as we both have, I think it's you just accept it. You know there's going to be games that they have no right winning, that they are either more than competitive or they just outright win, and they're going to be those games where you're like, what the hell? Like, we should destroy this team by 4 touchdowns, and then you're either battling to squeak out a 3-point win a la the Miami game last year, or you just flat out lose it. So I like the direction this team is in. I really finally have just given up my assessment that Tom Coughlin needs to leave. I will admit it freely, I'm not the biggest Coughlin guy, but I have to just accept the fact that he is good for this team right now, that what he's doing and what Jerry Reese is doing is just phenomenal, and I don't question any moves they make anymore. When they bring someone in or they don't bring someone in, I just accept it. And that happens when you get 2 Super Bowls within a 5-year span. You just deal with it. You just have to understand that they're doing what they think is best for the team, and if it's what they feel is best for the team, then I have to feel it's best for the team.
Are you at a point now as a Giant fan, feel that we're in some sort of a cycle? Whereas, the Pittsburgh Steelers win 2 Super Bowls and been to 3 Super Bowls in 5 years, that the Giants have done too. Now it's probably New Orleans' turn to overcome this, to overcome everything they're going through. Do you think it's going to be this almost feels like it works in a cycle as far as the Super Bowls?
Yeah, I would say this. I think this year will be the year that tells me if this team is going to dominate for a few more years or if it's just going to be another let's-see-what-happens year-in-year-out approach. So I think sports has turned into that anyway, where, it's always year-by-year. It seems like now the Super Bowl champion is whatever team comes in, towards the end when it comes to seeding for the playoffs. So I can see this year being the year where the Giants win 12 games and something happens at the end to kind of put a mar in the season and then get blown out in the first round. Or I can see them just completely dominating, win those 12 games, but then going in and just running roughshod throughout the playoffs and, making a respectable showing. So I think this is the year that's going to tell me that, personally, because I think it's safe to say Eli has a few more years left of being – a very good quarterback. And then after that, you see what happens. But I have high expectations of this team. And because of Eli, because I think the leadership is in place, you know, because I do have faith in Tom Coughlin, even though I'm not one of his biggest supporters. I do believe that he has a, you know, he has a system in place, and that, you know, I trust that he knows what he's doing. So I'm actually going to tell you right now, I think 12 wins for this team is a realistic goal.
How many wins did you say?
12. I'm going to say 12. I think 12 is, if they're serious about really trying to compete, you know, year in and year out, it starts with this year, and I think 12 wins would be a good barometer to have.
It's
a tough schedule. It's a tough schedule, believe me. But that schedule after they won their first Super Bowl with Eli was very tough, too, and they pulled out 12 wins.
I think the Giants have, I think the Giants are a 10-win team this year. I think they make it into the playoffs. I think they're. I think I'd rather have them as a wild card going in, so they don't lose. It's because it just doesn't seem like, with the exception of the New Orleans Saints, who won the Super Bowl that one year with having the bye week. I don't. The bye week doesn't play in favor for a lot of teams.
No, it doesn't. But I think because look at the teams that have won the last couple of Super Bowls. Look at their quarterbacks. I think that comes more into play than anything else. I think all these teams that have really good quarterbacks, they probably had down years for them. Or last year with the Giants, I mean, was it a down year technically, even though they got in the last game of the season? I don't think many people expected much from the Giants, to be honest. So they went 9-7. Everyone else in the division was kind of really fell off kilter, especially that dream team over in Philadelphia. So I think it just depends how you're playing towards the end. I think that's really what it comes down to. How you're playing at the end of the year, not what you do in the beginning of the year, not what you do mid-season. It's how you're playing at the end of the year. I think that's really what is going to tell me who's going to be a contender and who isn't.
Well, I'm going to agree to disagree with you.
All fair, man.
Well, here's a little side note as far as the Giants are concerned. Nyheim Nix is back. So now, you know, we're going to find out on Wednesday what it's going to look like with Victor Cruz, Nyheim Nix, and then the rotating third receiver on who's going to get the ball, who Eli Manning is going to be throwing the ball to. And it's also going to be the first time since the 2007 season. Where there's no Brandon Jacobs in the backfield. So, you know, we're gonna move forward at this point and see what's going on with both the Giants and the Jets. You know, I didn't have much time for sound off today because of all the technical problems that we've had. So, you know, I take my share of the responsibility of those technical problems. So, Jose, I apologize. I have apologies to Gary Fetter, who was nice enough to come on with us for a few days. Yes, he was here for days, ladies and gentlemen.
Commitment. That's commitment.
Yeah, that's commitment. Thank you for Jose bringing your A game today. I appreciate that. I just want to finish up on one other note with you, and I wanted to talk about the situation with Penn State. Their game yesterday, they lost. They lost their opener yesterday, and a lot of footage was shown of Joe Paterno. You know, obviously the story with him and Jerry Sandusky, well documented. But do you think for this team to move forward, and for all of us as a public to move forward, they have to stop talking about this during the broadcastings? Like I understand, yesterday was the first home game in years without Paterno there. But do we have to leave it alone?
I think this year. That's all it's going to be about. And I think for this year, it's fine because people are going to start talking about that and they're going to continue to talk about that. I do feel the only way it will stop is if either A, this team starts winning big or they start losing big. And then it'll just turn into, we'll see where the media takes it from there. You know, there could be the point where it's like, you see, Joe Paterno's no longer here. Not that Paterno has any choice in the matter, unfortunately, that's not his choice anymore. But I think for this year, that's what it's going to all be about. I think after this season, though, regardless of what happens, I think we all have to move forward, you know, as far as to continue talking about it, because then it's just a lazy job by the media where everything will end up being about Paterno, you know, whether it just be solely on a football basis or more than. And, you know, we're all tired of talking about it, but you know how the powers that be are here. You know, the people who don't have any care about football, the ones that are going to continue talking about it and just going to continually bring it up. And to be honest, it's unfair because not that I don't, you know, I'm not excusing anything that happened because everything that happened on Penn State's watch, you know, they deserve every bit of blame they get. Unfortunately, though, the people that get punished are the people that have nothing to do with it. And that's been my point this whole time is that the people that are being punished for this are the people that had absolutely nothing to do with this.
Do you have a hard time with this little note from yesterday? Paterno's widow, Sue Paterno, watched the game from the stadium suite. Paterno died in January, and as part of his employment agreement, and the family got use of their suite for 25 years.
No, listen, despite everything that happened there, look, I know it's a huge ordeal, but I'm not going to let this obvious one bad thing ruin a lot of good that family did. And obviously it was a horrific thing that happened. But again, unless you tell me without a shadow of a doubt that, and I mean, there has been reports that seem to go in that direction that Paterno openly knew about it, what was going on, or so at least to a point he knew something was going on. But unless you tell me that Paterno was letting this happen, he knew everything that was going on and still defended this man, I have no problem with Penn State, you know, taking care of the Paterno family because he's done so much for that school. If you tell me one day, though, that Paterno knew every sort of detail of the situation and that he let it go regardless just for the sake of winning football games, then, yeah, then there needs to be steps taken to remove everything and anything with Paterno's name, and, you know, his family needs to move on from that situation as well. But right now, as the way things stand, I have no problem with this.
All right. Well, Jose, I think that's it for us. I think that we're sort of done. I think we're done for today.
It's always great talking to you, man.
All right. Listen, AngryJose15 on Twitter, backsportspage.com. I'm Randy Zellia. See you next week.
Take a deep breath.